Hi, everyone here and around the world. This past week on May 11th, 2024, beautiful northern lights glowed a spectacular magenta color as our sun had the most powerful G5 geomagnetic solar storms since the beginning of this century, which was back on Halloween of 2003. This photograph was north of San Francisco in Middletown, California. The intense northern lights were seen as far south as Florida. 3 nights before those massive solar flares, I was reporting here on the Earth Files YouTube channel, part one of my interview with retired U.S. Navy veteran John Smith about how do UFOs burst out of ocean waters completely dry? He was a shipboard analyst with the U.S. Navy's SIRTAS and SOSUS Underwater Array Surveillance System. John Smith served the Navy from 1972 until 1991 and personally saw a boomerang-shaped UFO, also known as Unidentified Submerged Object, or USO, pop out of ocean water near Norway at high speed, rising straight up without any water dripping off the unknown UFO craft. Since that broadcast, Earth Files has received more reports from other military background eyewitnesses of UFOs and USOs. Here's one from KW, quote, "I served on 3 different submarines, the USS Redfish, the USS Sam Rayburn, and the USS Hado. The Hado was a Thresher-class submarine, and our assignment was to follow about 2,000 yards behind Russian missile subs. If we received a very low-frequency transmission that Russia was attacking the U.S., or if a Russian missile subsurfaced and opened her missile tube doors, we were to sink her." So how did the U.S. know where Russia's subs were? The answer is SOSUS, that same sound surveillance system that John Smith reported about last week. It could track UFOs, but also track Russian submarines. And by the way, the Russian subs were super noisy, close quote. Here's another from LF in Southwest Puerto Rico, quote, "I served in the U.S. Air Force and Air National Guard for 20 plus years. I also had many UFO sightings in the southwest of Puerto Rico. Plus, I have family members who fish, and they have seen lights come out of the ocean toward land. I'll say this, my whole family have seen and suffered paranormal occurrences before and after our sightings for years, giving us a feel that the UFOs are not like us, but are from this planet. It's hard to explain," close quote. When I asked John Smith if he or any other Navy personnel that he knew had taken photographs of USOs and UFOs, he told me that he himself had not taken photos of the mysterious craft that his Navy worker colleagues had seen pop in and out of ocean waters. But he said he had once been handed an official Navy highly classified paper document for John Smith's signature. And the document was an 8.5 by 11 inch pamphlet. John Smith scanned through several pages of what he was asked to officially sign in, and he was stunned by what he was looking at. Here now, John Smith continues his surprising discovery in this Earth Files Part 2. Did anybody in your years of working in the Navy and then working outside of the Navy talk with you specifically about extraterrestrials and their technologies interacting with our planet Earth?
That would happen only at work.
And if you didn't censor the truth, what would happen?
Well, I can give you an example. I was the acting watch officer, just sitting at my desk doing some paperwork, and the courier from downstairs brought up a message. I opened it up because I have to sign it, looked at it, and I couldn't believe what I was looking at. It had pictures of craft and aliens.
Had pictures of alien craft?
And the aliens, EBEs. That's what it said on the pamphlet, EBE. I signed my name, but really didn't have a clue of what this was. They had pictures of 10 different craft and 4 different species of EBEs.
And did those words appear?
Yes.
Explain what you understood them to mean.
Extraterrestrial biological entity.
And there were 4 different ones.
Yes, completely different.
Can you please describe each one of the 4 EBEs?
The first one I saw was about 8 foot, looked like a Nordic person, had white hair, very, very white skin. And since it was a picture, I guess this is what they would wear. It was like a metallic looking suit. Wasn't metal, but it was just metallic looking.
Color?
Silverish.
Any symbols?
Not that I remember.
What was the color of the hair, the skin, the eyes?
White and blue eyes.
White hair, not blonde?
White hair, right.
And the skin?
It was as white as if you bought a can of white spray paint.
Color of the eyes?
Blue, very bright blue.
Like the sky?
Darker blue.
How big compared to your human eye?
They were in proportion to the body. If you were 9 foot tall, your eyes would be bigger. It looked very proportionate to the size of the head.
Were there any eyebrows?
I really don't recall eyebrows. The lips were thin.
The lips were thin. What about the nose?
Just as long as like a human nose, but thinner.
And it specifically said that this tall, white being was 9 feet tall.
Yes.
Any other words about that image?
Nope, because I saw people coming, so I wanted to sign it before I have to chase everybody away because I couldn't let anybody come over where I was sitting and look at it.
What did you see in the other 3 images?
I did see a 4 foot gray. It said 3 to 4 foot.
Okay, what else?
Something that looked like a praying mantis. The best way to describe this thing. Human-looking praying mantis.
Was there any color?
It was like the color of a palm leaf when it's dying. It's a yellowish green.
So we've got a 9 foot tall white Nordic. We have a 3 to 4 foot gray. What was the shape of the gray's eyes?
Almond.
Were they slanted up?
Yes, they were slanted up.
Solid black?
Yes, solid black.
Wearing?
It didn't look like it was wearing anything. It was just gray.
It might have been a protective leotard that they were wearing as a bodysuit?
Yes, that's what I understand. And I understand that their black eyes, that's a covering. That's what I was told. It's like a sunglass.
Yeah. In addition to the 9 foot tall, white skinned Nordic male and the 3 to 4 foot tall gray that did not seem to be wearing a uniform, but seemed to be all the same color with the slanted black almond shaped eyes, a yellowish green human looking praying mantis. Why did you say human looking praying mantis?
When you think of a praying mantis, you think of real thin arms and the triangular face, I guess it would be, but it wasn't really triangular face. It was more oval.
More of an oval face that reminded you of a human face?
Yes, I mean, the eyes look pretty human to me.
This might be some genetic combination.
That's a possibility. I mean, that's the only picture I've ever seen of one I know is real. So that's all I have to go by.
I wonder if there was any indication that the 9 foot tall Nordic-looking being is somehow in charge of what is happening?
Well, that's not what I've been told. I've been told that the Nordics and the praying mantis are not, they don't associate with each other, but that the praying mantis-looking thing is the one that has the most power.
The praying mantis has the most power, even over the tall Nordic.
Yes, that's what I was told.
Did they say where the praying mantis comes from?
No. I've never heard it, where any of them come from.
And the fourth image?
The last image was, it kind of looked like a cross between gray and something that would have been 6 foot tall. But it had like a suit on. Like a suit.
What color?
It was black.
What was the shape around the neck and the arms?
It had a thick neck. I remember that. And it looked like a football player.
Okay, so this is a gray that has a big neck.
Right.
I've never heard of a gray with a big neck.
It's the only one I've ever seen.
And the color of the skin of this large-necked gray was what?
It was gray, but it was dark gray, battleship gray.
Did it look like this is something it wore naturally, or is it possible that they put this being in a human suit?
The creature definitely didn't look comfortable in the picture. I didn't really make out much of a nose, just like holes. Real thin lips, just a slit, and no ears, no hair. It looked like a gray that was on steroids. Best way I can describe it.
What do you do with, this is some sort of a digital tablet looking at this, or is it in paper or what?
Paper.
So these are like color photographs.
Yes.
And the craft, were the craft identified with each of the beings?
Yes, they would have the picture of the craft. Underneath that would be a picture of the pilot. And then on the right side of the page were descriptions. I had under a minute to sign this thing and get it off my desk. So I was just going right through that thing and looking at it as much as I could. There was a lot of numbers, and they had the craft name. I don't remember what they were called. I just remember what they looked like.
You're holding this very classified secret file. What happens?
Well, the watch officer came back, and she looked at the person that handed it to me, and she was very upset that I had it.
What do you mean she was very upset?
Oh, I could tell it on her face.
But what did she say to you?
Well, she looked at what I was holding, and she just said, thank you, and took it from me and sat down and had the other person sit down with her. And excused me, so I went back to work.
Then what happened?
I worked on Ford Island. I was getting ready to take the boat back over to the base, and they stopped me and said that some people wanted to talk to me.
What happened?
Well, they pulled me in the room. I didn't see anything, signed the non-disclosure agreement, and kind of ruined my career after that.
Explain.
Well, I was getting ready to transfer. I was within months of transferring. But all of a sudden, they switched my base from where I was going, which was to Damneck, Virginia. They switched it to the Pentagon.
And that would have been what kind of work?
Same type of work. I was going to the Naval Oceanographic Processing Facility.
This is in 1992.
That would have been 1990. Because I got out in May 91, so that was the beginning of 1991 when this happened. About 3 weeks later, they pulled my orders to Damneck and told me I was going to report to the Pentagon.
And you felt that was punishment?
Yes, I do not want to go to Washington, D.C.
So what happened? You have to go work in the Pentagon, and were people tracking you every day?
I got out of the Navy. I got out and went to work for Hughes Aircraft, or Hughes Technical Services.
You got out of the Navy because?
Oh, I didn't want to go to D.C., And when Hughes offered me that job, I would have made as much money in 1 year as I would have, 8 years of retirement.
But the big reason?
I didn't want to be around those people. They scared me.
Okay, explain that.
They were very threatening in their manner.
And what were their ranks?
They didn't have on uniforms, just suits.
And how did they treat you?
Like I was a criminal.
Intelligence people working in the Pentagon treat military eyewitnesses as if they are criminals.
Yes, they did.
After you got out of the Navy because you didn't want to stay around these people.
Well, I knew if I went to the Pentagon, I knew the kind of people I was going to be around all the time. And the people that interrogated me, because that's what they did, interrogation.
And did they threaten you?
Oh, yes. Threatened me with jail, locked me up for the rest of my life, and nobody even knew where I was.
What did you say to those kinds of threats?
Told them I was doing my job. Asked them, what would you do? Somebody comes up, you have to sign it. You have to look at what you're signing. They didn't care.
Their job was just to intimidate anyone who had any reason to see UFO craft and beings in real photos.
It took me 30 years to talk about it.
I know that you are telling the truth.
Yes, I am.
And that we are on a planet in which reality is still classified. And it better change, or the planet itself is going to be impossible. As we are talking on May 5th, 2024, about honest details of extraterrestrial biological entities interacting with our planet, in and out of oceans, deep below into caverns deep inside of our Earth, why do you think that the United States government has not led the way in announcing the truth?
Because you can't save everybody.
And what is behind those words?
If you're powerful, if you're rich and you can afford it, then you'll probably be safe.
That they don't want anybody to know that there are extraterrestrials on Earth, inside of Earth, inside of the moon, and beyond, who might even be able to help us? Do you have any information from any direction about what could be coming between now, 2024, and 2030?
If you go up to 2040, I would say micronova.
Were you ever briefed about the sun doing a micronova when you were in the Navy?
No, but I have a lot of friends that still are either in the military or have contacts in the military, and we do talk, and that's one thing that comes up with them.
Today, as we speak on May 5th, 2024, do you have any information, even if it's rumors talking with fellow military people in all of these years, about this time being perhaps the most dangerous since World War II began? What do they say?
Ask me how prepared I am.
Because?
They're worried. They're worried that something big is going to happen before 2040, and they want their families to be in a safer place.
Solar micronova had not even been discovered before 2 years ago on April 20th, 2022, when Reuters headlined, quote, "Surprised astronomers find new type of star explosion, a micronova," close quote. Space.com also headlined, quote, "Pow! Scientists spot new micronova stellar explosion." Using the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope, the scientists witnessed never-before-seen small thermonuclear explosions on white dwarf stars. Such detonations make the entire surface of the white dwarf burn and shine brightly for several weeks, close quote. Those surprising micronovae, never seen before 2 years ago from Earth, appeared as bursts of light that lasted about 10 hours each. The newly discovered, micronova causes a thermonuclear fusion that converts hydrogen into helium. Quote, under the conditions in which this is triggered, this fusion is explosive, and the micronova is the result. It's like a thermonuclear bomb goes off on the sun, localized enough not to destroy the sun, but eventually can blow up again, maybe even stronger. Some scientists now think that micronova, quote, may be happening regularly across the galaxy and simply evading detection. So what would happen to Earth life if our sun does burst into a micronova between now and 2040, or even earlier? You all remember when controlled remote viewer Lynn Buchanan told me that a few years ago, back at the end of the 80s, that when he and half a dozen other of the trained controlled remote viewers worked for intelligence agencies in Washington, D.C., that every once in a while they would check with each other about various issues that they knew that they had been tasked to do controlled remote viewing, and they were not supposed to talk with each other. But every once in a while, he said that they would get into discussions. Have you ever had this question or this question? And one of them had to do with a micronova type event, a solar event, that could happen before 2030. And that related to a question that they were tasked with was, could they go in controlled remote viewing to the year 2030 and see what the world was like? And Lynn told me that he had done his own little survey and found that they, all of them, had been tasked with that 2030 question, and that he knew what he had seen and what he had reported officially. And that was that by the year 2030, the 8 billion population going up to that point had been reduced to 2 billion. And the haunting question was, what could take out 6,000 beings from Earth, and why? And that there was allegedly some link and connection with what that tasking determined about 2030. I know this is a 2040 question that comes in tonight, but that the concept that something would happen around the decade of 2030 to 2040 has been out there for a long time. And I've been trying to look at all of this with the idea that if we avoid talking about any of these subjects or these questions that seem to have possible implications for a future that might be something that we don't want to see happen, maybe we shouldn't talk about it. But there's another flip to that from what I have learned about living in this universe. If you do concentrate and learn as much as possible about what could micronova eventually do here or anywhere else, the more you learn, the more you might be saturating the consciousness of our universe with more information that could then counter it. No proof, but there are those kinds of discussions that go on out about what happens in a universe where there is conscious dialogue. And that's how the controlled remote viewers do their work. And this one about the decade around 2030, before or later, having some kind of an event. Maybe if we all knew what is being discussed and contemplated, maybe we could counter it. But I realize that it's philosophical now on this world, and that I hope that going into part one and part two with John Smith has helped all of you to have this keener insight into the very fact that when John Smith was approached with criticism, who was basically allegedly intimidated by the language used about him because he had seen the pamphlet with real photos of real extraterrestrial beings and craft associated with them, that the Pentagon would essentially turn around and attack him. And it, one of the questions at earthfiles.com for so long in my own life and work has been, what will it take for the governments, plural, of the United States and beyond, all of the governments in the world, to finally see that maybe one of the most important things that we could do on this planet to bypass the terrors of nuclear war and other horrors is for all of the people, leaders, followers, contributors, writers, doctors, scientists, to all get into discussions about the real truth of the universe that we're in, the planet and the solar system that we're on. And I know that John Smith feels strongly about that, that that's why he reached out to me. And maybe we're on a new cusp, that maybe this will break to where more and more facts and truth can be stated and reported, and that we will move from trying so hard to find out what facts are to maybe finally having so much factual documentation at every level, including being introduced some way by satellite to extraterrestrials, that the very fact that humans could finally, as an entire species, talk with each other in every language about other beings, the issues of souls, and the relationship of consciousness to the concept that keeps being presented to us that we might be in a holographic universe. And once, if that is confirmed, there's just so much new to learn, that looking back to World War II and all of the effort and money to keep everybody from knowing that our government discovered then that there were extraterrestrial biological entities and extraterrestrial intelligence, artificial, both at work on our planet and beyond, and that we are still in 2024. We haven't been officially told the truth, but look at people like John Smith, what he was exposed to, and what others are, and then they're threatened. I hope in our lifetime we will see that completely change from threats to let's educate everybody about everything as deeply as possible as we move out into the solar system and beyond. So on that note, dear Ian, I want to transition to see what you have pulled from tonight in terms of comment and questions.
Thank you, Linda. Yes, the audience is well engaged with the subject this evening, and there's quite a few questions that we've got to field from the active audience tonight. First of all, Yin Yang Glow comments as well and says that we're so happy that we got the positive side of the recent corona mass ejections, etc., and the activity on the sun, and experienced the northern lights, as most of us did over here as well, in Europe as well.
That is such a good point, because without all the energy that came from this micronova event, that's how we were able to see the rare magenta and incredible colors in so many places.
That's right. And I was speaking to friends across the United States as well, who had managed to see the amazing, almost like a sunset, and beautiful mauves and pinks that had strangely lit up the sky for hours after the normal sunset.
Well, let's keep this as a metaphor in the Earth Files YouTube channel and earthfiles.com, that if something seems like it might be spooky, scary, huge, sometimes it produces events that can end up with unexpected beauty, unexpected knowledge. Let's keep trying to hold on to that as our goal.
Okay, well, Jade Truth Seeker is in the chat tonight and says, I'm curious to know if Linda knows anything about the Hidden Star Island UFO ships hidden within our oceans, like the legendary High Brazil. Now, High Brazil, I think this is another comment that somebody else has made, I think, is that High Brazil was mentioned during the Peniston's binary download as one of the locations, and it's actually an ocean location. Perhaps that has some significance to underwater USOs.
Well, the big picture that I was given back in December of 1999, I still think that that was the most important discussion. Went on for 7 hours with one man retiring from the Defense Intelligence Agency and had sought out through a man who worked at the World Bank. They knew each other. They both worked intel. But one worked intel through the bank, and one worked in analysis in the DIA. And in that seven-hour discussion is where I learned right from the beginning, when he started explaining to me how extraterrestrials come into planets, come into moons, that in our own Earth, there are multiple extraterrestrial civilizations, and he broke it down into that the Nordics like to go down through all the waters, down through, meaning into the internal central caverns of this planet, that there are big, huge ET bases, and they've been there for a very, very, very long time, and that it's safe there. They know how to handle that part of Earth. So that was that was one extraterrestrial choice. Another extraterrestrial choice were the Greys, also referred to in that discussion with him as Ebens, which is the Ebens, the EBEs that John Smith saw in that pamphlet, extraterrestrial biological entities, and that the Greys like to go inside of mountains. And I remember asking him that there was a case in Australia, and that when I have been down there to speak, that I once was able to talk to a person who had investigated a case in which at close distance, like a mile, that there was a craft that seemed to swoop down over a freeway in an area. And I don't remember if it was in Sydney or Perth, we're very far apart, but it was one of the Australian areas that had a mountain or high hill range, and the UFO went right through the hill. That's exactly the way it appeared. Well, when I was in the conference and was a speaker, I got to talk with somebody who knew more about the case, and he said that there had been others in which there had been descriptions of eyewitnesses seeing some kind of craft go right, what seemed to merge, not going into a door that opens, not going into underground tunnel or freeway systems, but right into whatever it, mountain hill. Now, I have brought that up in conferences since, and the third area was reptiles like the warm Mesopotamian, but not on the surface. They go down also into the ground. But it was at conferences I have brought this up. And it was one of the very interesting facets that came up in one of the discussions with not Spartan 1 and Spartan 2 in my Antarctica documentary, but another SEAL who came forward to me after seeing my Antarctica documentary and told me, and did so in a very confidential way at a conference, so nobody would have any idea. And he said that he knew for a fact that we were on a planet where we were dealing with shape-shifting, and that the shape-shifting could be done at what we would consider to be the quantum particle and the subatomic particle area, and that we were dealing with advanced technologies that knew how somehow to literally change the appearance of the being at a subatomic particle level, and then can switch back. And all of this begins to come into tighter focus when I think back about the Defense Intelligence Agency analysts talking about how the ETs base inside of our planets and our mountains and beneath the basins of the oceans and the seas, and that one of the areas that he stressed over and over again, he said, Linda, we are dealing with a war, a conflict that is going on between these extraterrestrials with all of this sophisticated ability. And he said, here's the hard part, the really hard part. We can study them. We can know where they're based in general. But he said, because they have this ability to change at some subatomic level surfaces and can do it quickly, we can be tracking somebody that we think is, let's say, an Eben disguised as a human. And in 1 second, they can pop out, disappear completely. We lose them. And then it may be 10 more miles or 100 more miles. They will reappear, and they will either be in the enemy that they are in conflict with, that as their camouflage, or as nothing that can be seen, or as one of their allies. And boiling down a lot of what transpired in that 7 hours was that we humans don't know enough to understand how complicated the relationship between various extraterrestrial groups are and this planet Earth. And that he is the one who told me, we have proof. Our government, meaning the United States, has proof that these three competing extraterrestrial civilizations have been on this planet, inside of this planet, in this solar system, manipulating DNA in already evolving primates and many other life forms in order to perpetuate their experiments, their goals with life here. And that this is where it becomes difficult. And then it was a big, big discussion that I won't go into now about the manipulation of DNA in already evolving primates to create an evolving species of what we would call humanoids. And that we're one of those. We are one of the results. And I remember saying to him, well, doesn't it make sense for us to be told everything about what is going on? And I remember he started laughing and he said, oh, Linda, if only the universe and this earth were as simple as that. And he said it with great irony. We're in a very complex situation, but I personally think, and I guess I want to ask all of you, do you think that it leaves you with a more positive feeling being able to hear from John Smith honestly about what he was exposed to? Or does it reinvigorate your desire to get the truth no matter what? And the government wants a third path where they will control the release of the information through stop and start programs, the way it's been going, and hold off everything for as long as possible. And all of those are going on around us right now. It's a very complicated political scene. But one thing that John Smith and several other military people that you haven't heard yet, but I hope that you will at the Earth Files YouTube channel in the future. Several military people have gotten in touch with me to say, you know, it looks like the Pentagon is trying to control everything and they really want to squash this yet again. What Colonel Corso complained about in his book, The Day After Roswell, internecine warfare in Washington and the Pentagon. But what they have said to me, maybe it's a sign that things could maybe get better. They have said to me, but this is the first time, having been in the military and now retired, where I feel like that they may actually let more people beyond David Grush and the pilots talk, and that what they will be trying to prove is that they are no longer going to be trying to hurt people by getting them fired, making sure that there will be punishment in order to control the content that is released through what probably one of the biggest populations on the planet that knows that UFO, UAP, and all of it is real, including beings that are artificial and others that are biological, are all of the people who serve in military and intelligence. It's a paradox. They have the most information that could share with the general public, but they are the ones that are the most controlled. So on that note, Ian, I guess I want to know if you all think that the John Smith Part 1 and Part 2 helps you, even without the government, I guess, approving. Do you feel like these are the kinds of testimonies that help you feel convinced? Of course, we're not alone, and that there are a lot of people who have had firsthand directly, either with beings, around beings, in the water, wherever their military careers and intel careers have taken them. But we've never heard it because of non-disclosure agreements and the kind of punishment that John Smith was describing that they threatened him with. How do we get past threat? How do we get to a world that supports the truth? And there's smoke from some of the fires of the past few days, and I'm always having to explain it's either smoke or pollen or a combination, but I hope I got through enough without coughing too much. Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if we've got time to put up a quick poll to see if the actual testimonies of people such as the whistleblower we're calling John Smith actually help us to understand and accept and believe. Let's see if we could put a poll up in time. But in any case, I'll field some more questions.
Yeah.
Jay Truth Seeker also says, I've had my own contacts with Sasquatches and the benefactor humans from under the oceans, and a lot is going to happen from 2025 to 2030. We still keep hearing these dates.
Well, it was clearly that was the decade that the remote viewers that were working for our government, for the NSA, DIA, NSA, all of them, and that went back at the end of the 80s into that period, I think it went over the 1990 as well, is that someone or a lot of people in our government wanted to know if the controlled remote viewers could go to 20, that's what they called it, the decade of 2030. That's the phrase I've heard repeated, the decade of 2030. Well, there's 10 years, 30 to 40. So what would they see? The people who are talented enough to be controlled remote viewers. And among some of the things that I remember from talking about this with Lynn Buchanan were a lot of views of more water, not less, structures on some sort of new technology in which people would be expanding out onto the surface of water instead of along the beach areas where they could be pummeled more by water. Tremendous comments and differences about not being dependent at all on carbon fuels, that we are moving, if all goes well, we are moving to a whole new era where how we are getting our energy is not going to be self-defeating to surviving on a planet like this beautiful Earth that can only sustain so many trees until fires take it and it starts turning into a desert. And that's what I don't think any rational person who is keeping up with things now would think that the next 10 years are going to be a walk in the park. No, they're not. But does that mean that we curl up in a ball and say, I don't want to wake up until 2050 and have a party? Just being silly is about that people say, well, I'll build my house underground, which a lot of wealthy people are doing, and I'll ride out whatever it is that's coming, and then everything will be even greater and better. Whatever that truth is, I think it's fair to say it was a fact to control remote viewers working for our government who had a position and a facility in which to do controlled remote viewing on questions for our government. And this was one of the important ones that Lynn Buchanan was left. He said that it really affected him, of that controlled remote viewing at 2030. So today, we are at least beginning to walk on a path for the whole Earth that seems to be headed toward finally being told the whole truth about the fact that we're not alone, that there are extraterrestrial biological entities and lots of them in different systems, and we will eventually know that. Would that change 2030 if it were announced? Would the entire next 100 years, could that be fundamentally changed to a whole century that could be more positive? If we were just told the truth and everybody on the planet, everyone, had the same knowledge. And I think right now, the way this stop, start, watch the shiny ball over here while we're doing this over there, all of that still goes on. How do we get from right now, how do we get from the middle of May 2024 to 2030 and open up the truth? That's what I'd most like to contribute to as deeply and best as I possibly can. And with the help of Brad and with Ian and Eric and all of you, it actually can be fun, even when the issues can seem overwhelming and depressing. Okay, Ian.
Hi, Linda. We're running the poll at the moment. We've got, does testimony from whistleblowers help you feel convinced we're not alone? We're currently running, it has been at 93%, just dropping down to 91%, but we're in the low 90s at the moment in yes, and 9% at the moment are saying no.
And that so is, keep that running for yeah, people. Repeat that question, the question that is in the poll.
Does testimony from whistleblowers help you feel convinced we're not alone?
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it's in a positive way. Yeah, go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, I want to acknowledge our super chats this evening. So thank you again to Moonbird. It's good to see you back here, Moonbird. And Janet Risenbank, Dylan FIQUA, and Yin Yang Glow, of course, and 1111. Yin Yang Glow says she's the one who made the comment about the CMEs, etc. Some people in the chat are looking forward to seeing you and listening to you and watching your presentations at Contact in the Desert. So I think it's appropriate that we mention Your appearance is at Contact in the Desert coming up later this month. It's dates May the 30th till June the 3rd. And Contact in the Desert at Indian Wells. Find all the details on the website. I'm posting the links here in the chat and underneath the description video tonight. And there's also links at our website and all of our social media.
And for those of you who write me notes and say, can you show Ian? Where is Ian? And I write back and say, he's in England. Well, he will be at Contact in the Desert at the end of this month. So if you want two for the effort and trip of one to see me and to see Ian, we'll be at Contact in the Desert. Ian will be doing a lot of work around with contacting a lot of people. And I've got three presentations and how many panels, two or three panels to do. So it's going to be, I think, really an energetic conference. And maybe, just maybe by then, something else will have broken and we'll all be able to be talking with each other about fresh news. Let's see what does happen.
That's right. We're looking forward to meeting the people as well. We also meet up with a lot of experiencers, and they can feel that they can safely share their stories with us. And we often get good leads when we meet people at Contact in the Desert.
Right.
I'll be there from Wednesday evening onwards.
Yeah. All right. What about other questions, comments on tonight and John Smith?
Yeah, well, there's one question here, which is references the USS Forrestal. Did you ever hear anything, Linda, about an experience that the USS Forrestal had with an encounter with UFOs, USOs off Puerto Rico? This person in the chat, John B., says he thinks there may have been a UFO encounter that damaged the USS Forrestal in Puerto Rico.
As you are asking that, I think that I heard something like that when I was in Puerto Rico investigating for almost 10 days the Chupacabra. And it was one of the few times in my life where I actually experienced a moment of pure terror. And I bring it all up because there was no question. There were bloodless, strange chupacabra attacks on a variety of different types of animals. There were glowing spheres being seen in the sky all around the island. There were people who were moving, or they were leaving the island because they were terrified. And I was gifted, I guess, with a certain ballast that what takes over is the curiosity that I have to find out what is at the bottom of something, like what was happening in Puerto Rico, but especially what was the relationship between all of the animal deaths in Puerto Rico and the animal mutilations that I had studied so much in the United States and beyond. They're quite different, actually, except that there was a kind of bloodless nature that the chupacabra seemed to be in a category that was not easily understood. Well, one of those nights, we had gone down to water where it glows at night. And we had been out in a boat. It was just so incredibly beautiful. It was totally beautiful. Nothing, just getting away from all of the hard investigations and going to all these animals and trying to understand. And there were half a dozen of us who we were staying at a place that was near. And we went to a car. We got in a car and we got back to where we were lodged. But a couple of us said, well, it's beautiful out. Let's take a walk up this path that goes high so we can see the sky. The whole idea was astronomy and stars. And I think there were, at where I was, I think there were three or four people. And they were scattered going up the path. And you've got to remember it's all this other phenomena that is around the island, that then it was really truly extraordinary. But we're on the path to seek out something that would be in the sky, that might be beautiful, might be a UFO, who knows. That was the goal. Well, we had gone maybe at most 100 feet, and it had a steep rise on this path. And all of a sudden, everywhere, just like somebody turned on a switch in a Walt Disney movie, it was that sudden and startling. Dots of light, thousands, millions, have no idea. Just, it wasn't down below, and suddenly we're surrounded, and it just was like it came on. And the other people said, "Oh my God, let's get out of here." And I said, "No, I want to see, how high does this go?" And I started walking on this path with all of these lights coming on, coming on, coming on. And I got up at about probably another 100 feet. And one of the strangest sounds I have ever heard, it wasn't like a pitch. It was multiple frequencies. It was extremely weird. And it got added to all of the lights. And at that point, I felt terrified. And I don't feel that very often, never have. And I was torn. But I want to find out what made the sound. I want to find out what is making all these lights come on. And people started calling my name. And that was one of the moments in my life where I was completely transported by what is happening here, but ended up being pulled out of it, because the truth was that Puerto Rico was so strange. There were so many UFO, USO being seen, the strange animals, no blood, but strange everywhere. Now, why? Why have the phenomena for at least the last 200 years of written histories? When it comes in a wave, and latitude and longitudes will end up cropping up in, if you take meticulous notebook notes of where mutilations are, or unusual deaths, or abductions, or UFO sightings in the air, or UFO landings on the ground. You will find that over a period of time, for me, 45 years, I've been trying to understand all of this. Some latitude, longitudes repeat. And it has always left me, long ago, even when I was working on A Strange Harvest in 79 to 80, it was one of those early discussions that kept evolving and growing over the next 30, 40 years. Is our planet looked at through a grid? If we knew the instruments, the technologies that are applied to our big Earth, what would we learn? Over and over again, whether it has been animal mutilations or crop circles or human abductions or the appearance of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, through all of the notebooks, my own work, going places, there are repeated patterns, and they are often in the same areas, to the place that if I hear a specific town in Colorado or New Mexico, I immediately ask, "Have you had any animal mutilations reported in the last 12 months?" More often than any other places, the answer could be yes in a certain number of these places that I carry kind of in my mind, but it is part of the phenomena. Well, why would there be repeated anything near the same latitude, longitudes on this big planet? Why? To me, that reinforces the concept that the DIA analyst gave me back in December of 1999, that our whole planet is being interacted with and even fought over in some cases by different extraterrestrial civilizations that look at our planet surface, interiors, levels, and beyond. And that in that process, the idea that we are dealing with something that is constantly repeating whatever it is doing at very specific latitude, longitude points, means that we are still on a planet that has never been told the truth, that perhaps the very experimenters who ended up manipulating DNA and already evolving primates to create perhaps a series of humanoids that included Denisovan and Neanderthal and Homo sapien, that they never really ever left. That DIA guy said, we have proof. Three extraterrestrial civilizations have been competing over this planet for 278 million years. And it's still ongoing today. Well, there's 8 billion of us on this planet. If 1 billion of us started asking simply for the respect to be told the truth about our relationship with our Earth, with each other, with the universe, I wonder if it could change a possibly troubling decade into a time in which exploration and learning could begin to dominate human minds instead of territory and war. And on that note tonight, I'd like to end there and send out a huge agape hug to everyone on this dear, dear struggling planet. Agape. Look at your fellow humans as fellow beings. If we didn't hate each other, if we didn't fight each other, if we didn't kill each other, maybe it would be heaven on earth. I'll see you next week.